Okay, so the story goes on that after the Biryonim, the ruffians, made the tremendous hunger in Jerusalem, so Abba Sikra, who was the head of the ruffians, he was a the son of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's sister, that's his nephew. So he sent to meet with him secretly, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai confronted him and said, you know, the way you guys are going, we'll all die from hunger. So let me out of the city, right, to, try to do something. So Abba Sikra says, look, I can't negotiate with the Romans. I can't let you go out and negotiate with the Romans, because then the ruffians will kill me. Right, so putting my life at danger to go through with any motions to help you with your plans to reach a diplomatic resolution with the Romans. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, so think of something, you know, so I could get out of the city and speak to them. Maybe I could save something. So Abba Sikra says, look, I got an idea. You know, let out a rumor that you're sick, and people should come and see you in bed, and then have something that really smells awful, you know, in the room with you, so people think that you're like sick, dying, and ultimately dead. You know, that's the smell of decomposition, so the rotten stench will be rather convincing that you've died. And after that, don't let anyone else touch you, just your closest students that you know are trustworthy, because everyone knows a dead body weighs much more than a live body. Chai noses atzmo, right? The live person who's being alive carries his weight somewhat, whereas a dead person, it feels much heavier than the person was in his own lifetime. So people will feel that you're alive if they touch you. So make sure only the most trustworthy that will know your secret will be the ones that handle your body, and no one from the outside should touch your body, because otherwise you're really alive. All right, so Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yeshua, his Talmidim, the ones that handled the coffin, and they bring it to the gates of Shai. They said, look, let us out to bury our master. They said, all right, well, we want to be sure he's dead. We want to pass our spear through the coffin. They said, look, that'll look terrible in the eyes of the Romans. They say if they spear their own rabbis. Okay, so let us shake up the coffin. That also look very bad, you know, that they shook up the coffin, you know, and showed such disrespect to their own leaders. All right, so the guards fell for it, and they let them out. All right, so Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai then gets out of the coffin and, you know, approaches Aspasianus, Vespasian, and says, Shalom Alecha Malka, Shalom Alecha Malka, you know, greetings to you, O King, greetings to you, O King. And Aspasianus says, you're high of death, you know, you deserve death twice over now. Because, first of all, you called me a king and I'm not, I'm just a general. Right. And number two, if I'm a king, why haven't you come thus far? If I'm really a king, you should have showed me the proper respect and not had me wait all these months and years outside of Yerushalayim. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai told him, look, we were under an internal siege. You know, the ruffians wouldn't let us out. So Aspasianus answered him with a parable. Like, if you have a serpent around a barrel of honey, so the barrel of honey is inaccessible, so you got to break the barrel of honey. You know, so we won't have it, the serpent won't have it either. So you're saying, as alluding to, if, you know, the serpent, referring to ruffians, are, you know, laying an internal siege around Yerushalayim, not letting anyone out, so I have to destroy Yerushalayim, so I'm destroying the barrel. At that point, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had no answer, and Rabbi Yosef, and some say Rabbi Akiva, you know, quoted Pasuk Reishiv Chachayim Achar, sometimes God makes the Chachamim set back and lose their wisdom, again, indicative of this divine decree that that God wants Yerushalayim to be destroyed, right? And therefore he takes away Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's wisdom, Because Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai could have easily answered, no, that's not what you do. You don't break the barrel. You take a pair of tongs and you remove the serpent and you save the barrel of honey. I.e., you think of a way, some ingenious way to get rid of the ruffians and you leave Yerushalayim. And it's something so simple to say, but God didn't allow him to say it because God wanted Yerushalayim to be destroyed. But Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai still sticks to his position, but regarding what I told you, that you are a king, that's for sure true. Right? Because, you know, if you weren't a king, then you would not be able to, you know, overtake, to conquer Yerushalayim, and particularly the Beis HaMikdash, because the Pasuk says, Levonim ba'ad yirpol, the Lebanon, right, falls in the hands of the mighty. And Ein Levanon, Beis Hamikdash, the Levanon, right? This Lebanon refers to the Beis Hamikdash. This beautiful mountain refers to Yerushalayim itself. The Levanon, the Lebanon, is the Beis Hamikdash. Like something even more removed than the mountain, right? So, and Adir, the Mighty, he brings a pasuk that the Adir, you know, the Mighty One, is a king. So I see from the fact that you about to conquer Yerushalayim and the Beis Hamikdash, you must be a king, because Yerushalayim, and particularly the Beis Hamikdash, only falls in the hands of a king. And, you know, Gemara goes on to say that a messenger came from Rome, that the Caesar died, and they want to make you the new Caesar. Yeah. All right, the point that the Maharal finds that needs discussion, you know, everything in the story is pretty straightforward, but the one mystical point that needs explanation over here is, why is it that Yerushalayim can only fall in the hands of a king? You know, why can't a super general, take on Yerushalayim and destroy the Beis HaMikdash? A brilliant tactician, right? Or just a very powerful, cruel person. It has to be a king. Why does it have to be a king? That's the point that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai makes. You must be a king, otherwise it wouldn't be possible to take Yerushalayim. It's just an issue of military might. Why does it have to be a king? Right? So this Demaral explains that Yerushalayim, the fact that it's called a mountain, and mountain itself is separate from the ground that it is connected to, it's raised. It's raised above the ground. That's Yerushalayim is raised. It's called a mountain because it's raised over regular Eretz Yisrael. And Eretz Yisrael is called the highest of the countries, so Yerushalayim is doubly raised from the realm where the Gentiles are, because Eretz Yisrael is called Gavoh Mikol Ratzos, above all the other countries. And Yerushalayim itself is called a mountain. The mountain's even more removed. It sticks up. Right? It's because of the Kiddush of Yerushalayim and the Levanon, whatever that means. I don't know what its literal translation is. But the Levanon is even more removed than a mountain. The Beis Hamikdash, because of its Kiddusha, is even more removed from Yerushalayim. So it's something that's removed, right? It's something that's not on the same level as regular earthly affairs. Even Yerushalayim is above regular earthly affairs, even above the affairs of Eretz Yisrael, and so much so the Beis HaMikdash, which is above Yerushalayim. So it's not within reach of any regular force, because it's removed. That's what the word kadosh means literally. The word kadosh means to be removed. The Kiddushim Azhar, it says by Har Sinai, sanctify my means, stay away from the mountain. The mountain is removed, the mountain is off limits. Right? So, Kedusha in itself means to be removed. And you find because of its Kedusha, and so much more, the Beis HaMikdash, which is even more Kadosh, holier than Yerushalayim, is removed from all earthly forces. Yerushalayim cannot fall to a regular earthly force. It's not possible, because Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash, so much so, the Beis HaMikdash, is above all the earthly forces. Right? But a king, however, is not an earthly force. Right? It's certainly true about, Jewish kings that we mentioned once before in this series. Right? They're anointed with the Shemen HaMishkan, the same holy oil that we anoint Kohanim Gedolim. There's a Shem Namishra. It's like there's a certain, the king is, innately removed from the people, is innately on a higher level. He's raised to a higher level than the other people, right? In essence, he becomes a higher essence. It's like oil always rises to the top. It's a noble liquid. It can't mix with other liquids. So the king is anointed with oil. He becomes, in essence, removed from the people. Not just by a consensus, by agreement, do we agree to honor the king. The king is, in essence, a level onto his own, and has special halachas that apply to him. And as a sign for all this, that's why he's appointed with the anointment oil. But it's even true by Gentile kings. And this concept that that a king reigns by divine right is 100% true. It's a pasuk. B'mulachim imlachu. God says it is through me that kings reign, that God, as it were, gives of his midah malchus, his divine attribute of being a king, as it were, he shares it. Of course, there's a very great difference between the way he shares it with the Jewish kings and the way he shares with the Gentile kings, and that's the secret of the difference between the bracha that we make for the Jewish king over the bracha that we make over a Gentile king. A Gentile king gets a bracha that we make over him because God was nasan mikvodo. He gives from his glory to flesh and blood. Lends, right? By a Jewish king, shecholak, he actually gives a portion. So of course, a Jewish king has a portion, right, as it were, own stock, right, in God's midah, God's attribute of majesty, whereas a Gentile king only has it on loan, but nonetheless, even if it's only on loan, but still, it's coming by divine right, it's coming by divine mandate that he is a king, right, so Yerushalayim, is beyond earth, and so much more so, the Beis HaMikdash is beyond earth. So it can only fall under another supernatural force, and the king who reigns by divine right could be that supernatural force. So of course, we said many times in this series that Yerushalayim fell by divine edict, right? And it's not Aspasianus, it's not Titus that destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, it's our sins, but nonetheless, it's God's decree that destroys the Beis HaMikdash, so the one that carries out the decree has to be a vehicle for something that, for a force that comes directly from God, and a force that comes directly from God is the power of majesty. It's on loan by Gentile kings, and it's in essence given over to Jewish kings, but it's nonetheless, it is on loan to Gentile kings. Gentile kings carry it on top of them, even if they don't own stock in it. All right, so God wanted to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. It's going to be destroyed by a force from the beyond. And right, that's why it must be that Vespasian seems that he's going to conquer the Beis HaMikdash. It must be he is a king, and he has the divine right that kings rule by upon him.